Omnibus is a production of iHeartRadio.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1178.1K0626, certificate number 50326. The Smoot.
I had the privilege to meet with Oliver Smoot, who is a living length standard. And Ollie, this honor is normally reserved for kings and pharaohs. How did it happen to you?
Well, I don't know about them, but I got it because I'm short. 5'7", I guess, is below average these days.
Okay, and how many smoots was it across the bridge?
364.4 and an ear.
How tall are you?
I am 5'10". Like I used to say, I'm 5'11" when I was a little short, but I've been getting a little shorter in my 40s.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much straight up 5'10" now.
Yeah, I have always said I was 6'3", because I was always 6'3", but I went to the doctor not long ago, and they said I was 6'2", which infuriated me. I refused to accept the measurement. I appealed to the concept of measurement uncertainty, which is that no two measurements of a single thing can ever really be identical.
Were you appealing to, you know, the photons of light entering the doctor's eye might actually...
No, I was saying like, well, your machine isn't calibrated correctly. You know, the thing about measurement uncertainty is there are a lot of different ways that that uncertainty can be produced.
It's the Heisenberg principle.
That's the new bell sound for you, is the raspberry.
Too lazy even to find the bell.
It's right over there.
Or too messy. I had a very tall friend who was 6'9", and he would always say 6'8", I think.
Oh.
Because he thought that would be slightly less freakish.
Sure.
But now he's in his 40s as well, and now he's actually
6'7". Sure, yeah, exactly. you lose more the higher you go.
You know, it varies with time of day. You should have had your doctor measure you in the morning.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, measurement uncertainty, it can be calibration of instruments. It can be your system of measurement. It can be the procedure of measuring a thing. It can be the skill of the measurer.
It could be whether you're wearing shoes.
It can be the time of day. It can be the environment. They don't measure you with shoes. That's the problem. But thick socks, inch thick socks.
I'm going to go home and come back with my thickest wool socks, and we're going to do this again, doctor.
So to really get an accurate measurement of a thing, we end up measuring it multiple times with as great a degree of accuracy as we can, and then we kind of average the results. I mean, and there are, we have instruments that can measure things too, the angstrom, but we still cannot perfectly measure a thing.
Ask anybody who's ever done any home repair, you know, like always just measure more than once, measure twice, cut once, measure twice and average them together. And you'll somehow get a different number weirdly using the same tape measure. But
I tend to measure 3 times and cut between 1 and 3 times.
Yeah, the ratio is usually 2 to 1. They say measure twice, cut once. So if you measure 3 times, you have to cut 1.5 times.
Yeah, what I tend to do is cut long, try it. If it's long, sometimes you cut long and it fits perfectly because you want to get a little wedge in there. Other times you have to like shave a little micro bit off.
That's the haircut principle. You always want to err on the side of long. It's also the principle behind the intactivist movement.
Oh.
Anti-circumcision.
Intactivist.
Wait, you do not know the word intactivist?
No, but that's wonderful.
There's an intactivist running for president in this great land of ours right now.
The intactivist.
Andrew Yang is on the record as having intactivism as part of his platform.
If you circumcise your male children, you will be, it's effectively genital mutilation, and you'll effectively deprive them of a lifetime of pleasure.
The internet is full of genitally insecure people who are saying this all the time.
Is circumcision part of the Mormon tradition?
The Mormon tradition is silent.
Because you're a Western people, you could be reinventing the wheel. I come from a long line of people that follow religious prescriptions.
What's the Alaskan tradition on circumcision?
I think
have a marmot do it.
I think in having been born in 1968, it was still the general practice, the accepted practice in the United States.
Yeah, it was more boys than not.
Are there things that you think of as being one Ken Jennings?
Like one Ken, like if I was a unit of measurement, what it would be?
What is, I mean, there have to be things where you're like, huh, that's about one me.
A Ken Jennings is six hilarious tweets a day. Like if you can do six really quality tweets.
That's one Ken Jennings.
The Ken.
And if you do only three, so I'm generally operating at about a half Ken.
You're about a half a Ken.
Yeah.
You're a Ken.
Yeah, three good tweets a day, and I put the phone down.
I've never thought about this. What I would be if you? It's about newlywed game. If you were a unit of measurement, bachelor number one. What unit of measurement would you be? What is a Roderick?
I think of a Roderick as a unit of measurement of how uncomfortable an airplane seat is. Like one Roderick is one amount, like it's 20% larger than a typical accommodation for a standard human is. So Roderick is, it's 20% larger than a human.
It's 1.2 humans.
Because if I get into the bunk, let's say I'm renting a hotel room in Sertogenbosch, there's every chance that the bed will be made to accommodate someone who is 5'10". And so my 6'3/6'2-ness is just too big for the bed, by which I mean a bed with a headboard and a footboard. Or on a tour bus, if I climb into the bunk, it's just 20% too small.
It's a forced perspective thing where you're not giant.
No.
You know, you're just slightly large enough for things to look and feel a little off.
Yeah, I'm large enough to be on the upper scale of what a standard off-the-rack extra large shirt will accommodate. So an extra large shirt from Zara or Uniqlo will make me look like a pork sausage that's been on the grill for 10 minutes.
There actually is a unit called the Rod.
Yeah.
A Rod is 16 and a half feet.
And when you're...
So you're about 10 feet short of a Rod.
When you're like orienteering or adventuring in the wilds, if you're in like a canoeing portaging environment, rods are still...
That's a pretty big if, by the way.
Yeah.
For most of our listeners.
As someone who went to Outward Bound as a teenager, we talked about rods as a measure of distance all the time.
Really?
Yeah, because we were portaging our canoes from lake to lake. And so when you thought about the distance from this lake to that, and you're carrying a canoe and all your bags, you're very frustrated. It's hard work. And so we talked about those distances in rods.
Just as a way to distract you from the disagreeableness of
I don't know. I feel like maybe a rod is the length of a canoe.
Mm.
Or at least we sort of thought of it. Canoes aren't 16 and a half feet.
That would be a big canoe.
It
would be funny if you still thought of everything in rods today and you had to convert in your head.
Just like, how many rods?
Someone's like, the speed limit here is 55. And you're like, yes, but how many rods per hour is that?
Right. Well, there are lots of alternative measuring systems that attempt to either address those issues or do it comedically. Like the furlong is 660 feet.
That was once a more standard thing. You would say, the village is a few furlongs over there.
Yeah, a few furlongs away.
And now it's just horse tracks.
Furlongs are only commonly used in horse tracks, but there's also a modern, somewhat humorous system of measurement that's referred to as the furlong, the firkin, and the fortnight. Furlong being 660 feet, the firkin being...
What's a firkin? Volume?
A firkin is a measurement of weight. A firkin is 90 pounds.
Oh, 90 pounds.
And a fortnight is 14 days. So we don't really talk about, I mean, I guess if you're in the United Kingdom, you can say like it's a fortnight away. It's more of an estimation, right? 2 weeks.
It would be very hard to, you know, because a lot of your fortnight usage is going to be decimal. If you're like, I'll be there in 10 minutes. You're not, you know, I'm not going to text somebody. I'll be there in 0.00018 fortnights.
Right.
I guess I could if they were very, if that was how you're, I mean, if you're calibrated that way, if you're thinking in decimalization of fortnights, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. We had lots of people when we talked about Celsius and Fahrenheit reminding us that Fahrenheit makes a lot of sense for atmospheric measurement because it's just a measure of air hotness. When it's 100 degrees, the air is 100% hot. You're all the way to hotness.
Right.
And when it's at zero, you're at 0% hot. That's about as cold as it gets lots of places. So in different domains, these different systems work great. And at one time, there were just dozens of parallel ones because, you know, there'd be one for people making barrels and one for guys loading ships and one for fishermen. And everybody would have their own systems that made sense.
Well, in the UK, you still hear people refer to their weight in terms of stone.
Yeah. Like I'm 12 stone or whatever. Yeah,
stone is 14 pounds.
Which is not a unit of human weight that comes up much. It's very hard to lose or gain a stone.
Yeah, right. 14 pounds. Although, you know, as a bigger guy, I can lose 14 pounds or gain it.
I need to lose a stone. I just don't know the way to do it. I need to ask British people, not the Bake Off people.
I used to, my weight would fluctuate 10 pounds either way, and I wouldn't notice. If I'd gained 10 pounds, I think I would, I'd be like, something's weird. But it was always frustrating to other people who, if they gained 10 pounds, it was like, oh no. And for me, it's like, oh yeah, last week, I guess I lost 10 pounds. Weird when you're, again, 20% larger than a person.
Yeah, for you, a stone would be, really, you should have your own stone, a Roderick stone. Should be 1.2 human stones.
But you know, you can measure things in that furlong, firkin, fortnight system. You can, people have measured that one furlong per fortnight is actually about 1 centimeter a minute.
Oh.
So it is.
That's not a unit I use much, the centimeter per minute.
But. No, but this is, there you can like cross-pollinate these systems. One of the most famous, I guess, American and most commonly known hilarious measurement is the smoot.
What is a smoot?
Well, for instance, like a Sagan is also an American system of measurement.
Is it Carl Sagan?
Yeah, a Sagan refers to billions and billions of a thing.
Like 2 billion?
No, billions and billions. Oh. So multiples of billions. So a lot, basically.
If you have a billion of something, that's not a Sagan.
No.
But if you have enough that it's comfortably in the mid-range of billions.
Yeah, you need to be able to...
There's a Sagan number of human souls on Earth right now.
Right, there is a Sagan of human souls. You can...
Except he didn't believe in the soul, so he'd be very angry.
Right, there are billions... I mean, are there billions and billions? I suppose 6-7 billion is billions and billions. I don't think he meant billions of billions.
Right, it's not multiplicative. I would agree.
Right. But yeah, I don't know if
we have a perfectly good word for that.
This was the problem with my, this comes up a lot when you use the term a couple. Do you think of a couple as two or three?
I think a couple has to be strictly two,
but
I've had to be corrected on this point.
I am firmly in the a couple is three category because
in your personal life as well,
because this was a dispute that came up one time many, many years ago on the island of Maui between my dad and me. Back when Maui had mostly dirt roads, my dad and I were in a little store and there was a rack of comic books. And I said, can I have a couple of comic books? And my dad said, yes. And I brought three to the counter. And he said, I said two. And I said, no, you said a couple. And he said, a couple means two. And I said, a couple means three. And he said, you brought three. And so now you get none.
Whoa.
And I was like, none?
Your dad's like King Solomon of comic books.
Yeah, he cut the baby in two. And I was infuriated, so infuriated that I'm still infuriated, that he did not recognize that a couple surely means three, because otherwise you would just say two.
It seems like your definition is self-serving in that it gets you another Batman comic.
Well, yeah, I didn't read Batman, but yes, I wasn't a Batman comic book reader. What kind of fool do you take me for?
What were the comics? Do you remember?
Spider-Man.
Right.
The great comic book.
He's funny. He's an everyman.
He's a kid.
I'm looking up couple in Merriam-Webster's Collegiate.
Well, sure. They're going to say two because...
They do not think you should get a third.
Keep going.
Here
keep
we go.
Going.
Here we go. Definition four. You're in luck. After several definitions that only get you two comics. Definition right. four. An indefinite small number, few.
Thank you. A few. A couple is a few.
And did you know that God has spoken on how what a few is?
Oh, how many?
Obviously the...
It's got to be less than five, right?
In the first epistle of Peter, chapter 3, verse 20, God is talking, or Peter is talking about Noah's Ark, and he says, in it, only a few people, eight in all, were saved.
Oh, okay. Well, a few, if you're talking about like how many people... Are how
compared
many
compared to the population of Earth that it's getting flooded?
Right. I mean, how many French soldiers made it back from the invasion of Russia? A few.
So it's contextual.
Yeah.
If you have a few bacteria in your mouth, that could still be
hundreds of thousands. Right. But it's a few relative to the potential of the thing.
But there is no such ambiguity in the Smoot.
Oikos presents 15 seconds of strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Well, so the smoot is a unit of measurement that we can date very clearly to October 1958, when it's unclear whether you would classify this as a prank or as a, you didn't belong to a fraternity, I'm guessing.
No.
Did you belong to a Smarty Pants fraternity, one of those non-fraternity fraternities?
Not, or like Phi Beta Kappa or
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, something like that.
No.
I didn't either. I, in fact, during my college years, was arrayed myself against fraternities because you have to have a reason to live. You have to have a purpose.
I don't know the Greek letters in order. I'm not eligible.
I guess I don't either. Anyway, a frat boy, let's just call him that, from 1958, by the name of Oliver Smoot, although he was a frat boy at MIT, so it's not quite the same as like a frat boy at the University of Alabama.
Yeah, I don't think of MIT as a Greek system hub or nexus, but it's certainly a prank nexus.
Super high prank level at MIT.
Nerd pranks, like nerd turning pranks. Their little dome into R2-D2 every year right. or whatever.
And, lol.
And very kind of elaborate nerdy pranks, right? Like, I think, I feel like it was the first place I heard of college students like taking a Jeep apart.
Yeah.
And reassembling it in some
guys. In the library, right.
In the library. How did it get in there? Or actually taking out walls so that somebody's dorm room doesn't exist. It just becomes the end of the hallway.
Right. Or my old plan to put some of the former Bush administration people into a shipping container buried in the desert and change the dimensions of the walls by micrometers over the course of time. Also put mescaline in their water.
I'm not clear on how this prank works at all.
Oh, well, it's a great prank. It's just, it's a long con. But Oliver Smoot and his fraternity brothers, and I can only imagine the like sort of beery moment where they settled upon this. But they decided to measure the Harvard Bridge across the Charles River, mm-hmm. Which is the bridge. The bridge is not named for Harvard College. It's named for the same Reverend Harvard after which the college was named.
Right.
Because the bridge actually takes you right to MIT from Boston. They decided to measure the bridge in terms of how many smoots, which is to say how many times you could lay Oliver Smoot end to end across the bridge. So they laid Oliver Smoot down, they marked him at his head, and then he got up and moved.
Oh, he's not unconscious at this point. They're not moving him around.
No, he's having a good old time. Then he would get up and lay down again and they would mark another smoot. And I think
it does seem like college was less fun in the 50s.
If
this is the wild shenanigans they got up to.
You know, they obviously, yeah, they didn't have like Halo to sit and play. But this does feel like a kind of MIT-style goof. And I can only imagine that they picked Oliver Smoot because Smoot does sound like a unit of measurement.
So they already had in mind the measurement before they did it. The measurement did not come from the bridge game.
There have not been like extensive interviews of his fraternity brothers because the prank seems somewhat self-evident.
Also, who is this a prank on exactly?
Well, that's what I mean.
It's not a prank.
It doesn't qualify as a prank.
It's a Gedanken experiment.
I think it's maybe a prank on the citizens of Boston. It might have even been a prank on Oliver Smoot. They might have said like, this is some hazing.
Yeah.
You have to go lay across the bridge.
You have to go lay down at every single point on Harvard Bridge.
But it stops being a prank on Oliver Smoot because about halfway across the bridge, he got tired of laying down and standing up, laying down. I mean, that would be, it's like a CrossFit exercise.
This is a guy who got into MIT. He can figure out a smarter way to do this.
So what ended up happening is his fraternity brothers would pick him up and move him.
I thought you were just going to say they have a stretch of painter's tape his height.
No, they didn't do that.
You have to actually do it with a Smoot.
Well, and this is where we get into measurement uncertainty because they're, you know, making a chalk line at the end of one Smoot and think about
it. You've got the width of the chalk mark exactly, to reckon with.
You've got the height of his hair. You've got, you know, is he...
You've got shoelaces.
Over time, is he stretching out as they go? And also like operator error.
Yeah, it's not clear to me that if I lie down, I'm always the same... small decisions about like how straight my legs are right. Don't really affect your standing height, but they do affect your Smoot height.
Do you arch your back?
Exactly.
But I think in the middle of the night on October 4th, 1958, it was sufficient to just sort of generally measure like an estimation of a Smoot, basically. And they came up because Oliver Smoot is 5'7" tall, and that even is probably a rounding. But they decided that the bridge, the Harvard Bridge over the Charles River, was 364.4 smoots, which for comparison is 2,035 feet or 620.1 meters.
There's a real plus here is that they picked the guy with the funniest name. I wonder if that was part of it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like a smoot sounds like if his name was Anderson, you wouldn't say how many Andersons is it across the bridge, although that would kind of work. How many Jennings is it from here to there?
Well, I noticed when you and I were doing our names, a Roderick actually sounds like a plausible unit of measurement, more so than a Jennings, I thought.
Yeah, but a Smoot, I mean, a Jennings is a thing that you would measure, I think, the amount of heat from a thing.
Well, thank you.
It's 250 Jennings. You'd just say Jennings. Because the measurement of heat would be a Jennings.
It does seem like it would be named after some Scottish scientist, right. Like Sir Humphrey Jennings, who invented this kind of engine,
right.
Lends his name to...
400 Jennings is what's required to get a man to the moon.
And you, what you can also do that's funny is to put the Latin prefixes on stuff, you know, like a millijennings.
A millijennings, right.
Do you know the fake unit, the millihelion?
What is the millihelion?
That's the amount of physical attractiveness a woman needs to launch one ship.
Oh, right, because of Helen of Troy.
Right.
I think that there are plenty of those. Like, for instance, the there's a measurement of area called a barn. And a barn is a measurement of area of 1 times 10 to the negative 28th meters squared.
Oh, a very small barn.
A barn is a term of art used by, and it's actually a measurement, you know, it's actually defined. It's used by particle physicists to describe a very small area necessary, but I think a pretty large area in terms of measuring atoms passing through a, you know, if you're trying
some kind
to,
of aperture.
Yeah, if you're trying to, like, measure atoms that are coming from the Big Bang or whatever, or photons, you're trying to do it, and it's a very difficult process to do, equivalent to trying to hit the broadside of a barn.
Oh.
And so a barn is this measurement in particle physics of like the unlikelihood of being able to measure a certain photon. But in trying to extend that system of measurement, there's something called a barn megaparsec, which actually is an amount of area that is like in measurable in the centimeters.
How many barn megaparsecs can you do the Kessel Run in?
In 7 seconds. I can do the Kessel Run in 7 seconds of barn megaparsecs.
Well, remember the child's rhyme, 7 seconds to the smoot, 10 smoots to the hogshead. While we're on the subject of Smoot's name being funny, yeah. Like, did you know Smoot is a historically Mormon name?
Tell me more.
I looked up Oliver Smoot. He's actually Oliver Reed Smoot Jr.
So not named after Oliver Reed, the famous British alcoholic.
That would be very
actor.
Odd since he was born in 1940. His parents were like, I'm going to be a big fan of
this young actor
of Sons and Lovers. If he's named for Reed Smoot is one of the first, maybe the first senator from the state of Utah upon statehood.
Really?
But he was, there was an argument over whether to seat him in the U.S. Senate. He was also a Mormon apostle at the time.
Oh, and this is a difficult time for the Mormons in polygamy, the U.S. Senate.
Polygamy era still. Right. The church is still tacitly winking at polygamy. And so it becomes a big international cause.
This is right after Utah became a state.
Yes.
And part of making it a state was that they came up with this, or rather, there was a lot of conflict about making it a state because of this.
Until the church disavowed.
Yeah, right.
Plural marriage. But Smoot eventually did get seated. The Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which is kind of a funny AP history punchline because it's got a funny name, is named for Reed Smoot. So I have to think that an Oliver Reed Smoot from two generations later must have some kind of Utah heritage, although I can't be sure.
Well, interestingly, there is another contemporary hilarious measurement system named after a Utah senator.
Wait, really?
Yes. We're talking about the Garn.
Oh, there's a barn and a Garn.
Yeah.
I can tell you. That's Jake Garn who went into space.
That's right. And Jake Garn, the Utah senator who was the only sitting congressman to go into space, the WAGs at NASA refer to a Garn as a measurement of space nausea.
Oh, right.
That you experience when in space. So if you go into space and become so nauseous that you barf, it is said that you are experiencing one Garn. So I suppose you could have an amount of space nausea where you didn't barf, where you would be a portion of a Garn.
There's a lot of measurement uncertainty with something like nausea,
yeah,
which
right.
is like, very subjective.
It's kind of like the measurement of when a woman is in childbirth and they say, point to the unhappy face that right. is you right now.
Well, there is often a set of benchmarks, you know, even for things like, weather scales, where it'll be like a storm of 0.7, you know, it might be related to the damage that it's caused, not to a number you can point at of wind speed or anything like that.
Well, and that's true of a lot of our systems of measurement. Like we say things like how many times around, if you laid all the cable from a computer down end to end, it would circle the earth.
Kids love that. Go back and forth to all the M&M wrappers ever sold could go to the moon and back 72 times or whatever.
Or it's as long as five football fields or
that's like, very helpful to me. I like seeing area in terms of a U.S. state. Like if somebody says
it's as big as Rhode Island,
look how big Bavaria is. It's as big as exactly.
Right. We all the time go into a bar and order a shot. But what is a shot?
Wait, does a shot come from? Is it related to the shot you shoot?
No, it's not. It's just a shot of liquor is its own measurement. But from bar to bar, a shot can be poured 100 different ways. A cord of wood. What exactly is a cord of wood? I mean, if you put 10 cords of wood next to each other, it's not really a measurement of weight. It's a measurement of area.
I wonder if these are all gone. You know, if we're the last people that will know that there's cord, a wood-specific thing, or a ream, a paper-specific thing, or a hundredweight, you know, because these are left over from a time where industries created their own standards, and you would grow up and your kids would learn how the shop worked. And
And
now we're standardizing everything for laboratory reasons, and now it's going to be all cubic liters and
sure. Now that we have
kilograms.
A meter as decided upon,
there's not even a real kilogram anymore.
But we still talk about explosive power in terms of tons of TNT.
Right.
What the hell does that mean?
Like, am I supposed to picture that?
Like 40 tons of TNT in the jungles of Southeast Asia or in the deserts of Arizona.
That reminds me of a thing I really don't like, which is when they tell you how many Hiroshimas something bad is. Like, really? Isn't it? I don't know how too soon is to turn a humanitarian catastrophe like that into a unit of measurement. Like, it's as sad as 6 9/11s.
Yikes. It's as bad as 100 dead babies. But the thing about a Smoot is that the Smoot.
So does it get used?
The Smoot became, for a long time, I think, the city of Boston resented the Smoot because every year the frat brothers of Lambda Chi Alpha at MIT would go out in the middle of the night and they would redraw the Smoot lines.
They would just draw a chalk mark every 5 feet, 7 inches along the bridge.
They didn't get, Oliver Smoot graduated in 1962 and was gone and went and got a law degree, but they continued to propagate the Smoot as a system of measurement, and Boston didn't like it. But over time, it became a beloved tradition.
This is the turbo encabulator thing where engineering humor kind of became recognizable outside the lab.
That's right. And within MIT, which absolutely is obsessed with units of measurement because they're producing engineers and scientists.
And Hiroshima's.
They are also producing Hiroshima's. But they continued to do this until Boston started to celebrate it.
Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all in one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Now, the Harvard Bridge has gone through many incarnations over the decades. It was built between 1882 and 1891. And there was a lot of conflict between the city of Boston and the city of Cambridge over who would pay for it and how it would be built. But it was built on a kind of like the course of the Charles River. Underneath the Charles, there's not a ton of bedrock there. It's a lot of gravel and mud and silt. And so the bridge was built in a kind of unstable way, and over the decades, it's been replaced multiple times. Mm-hmm. So that the Charles Bridge that you see today, or I'm sorry, the Harvard Bridge that you see today, is in a way a kind of facsimile of the original Harvard Bridge. Every time they rebuilt it, they kind of made it look more or less like it used to look.
Right.
And at a certain point in the 1980s, they rebuilt the bridge. They did a major rebuild. And by this point, so the city of Boston kept trying to eliminate the Smoot. And
Boston's always trying to ban something.
They are.
They're trying to ban D.H. Lawrence. They're trying to ban the Smoot.
And they had, at a point, a plan to station guards on the bridge to keep...
What are they against? The chalk mark? They don't like the chalk mark?
Well, they just don't like that it defaces the bridge, because the Smoots also inspire other people to come do chalk artwork and other things on the bridge.
I see.
And also
the Smoot were existing on a piece of paper somehow given to tourists explaining the Smoot, Boston does not object to it as a unit of abstract measurement concept. They just don't like chalk on their bridge.
And also then there became a tradition of measuring how many Smoots it was across the bridge from each end. And because 5'7" is a strange unit of measurement, the two Smoot marks don't overlap. They kind of vary as they go across.
I see, because it ends with a fractional Smoot.
Right. And also there are marks at 50 Smoots and 100 Smoots. The actual measurement of the bridge is 364.4 Smoots and an ear. So, you know.
Is it his ear?
His ear, yeah.
Oliver's ear?
Well, the distance of one ear. Anyway, the city of Boston, trying to eliminate the Smoots, realized that the Boston Police Department actually used Smoot markings to determine the place where accidents occurred in police reports and other crimes.
So instead of saying roughly a third of the way across the bridge,
they were like, it was at the 72 Smoot mark.
So non-MIT people are now thinking of that bridge, at least in terms of Smoots.
So I first visited the Harvard Bridge in 1986 and was not familiar with the Smoot, and walked across the bridge and was confused and delighted by all of the action on the bridge, all of the markings and hash marks, and the word Smoot is used repeatedly.
Are these now permanent fixtures of the bridge, or are they just, it's transitory chalk mark?
Well, so in 1986, when I visited, this was before the reconstruction of the bridge. Mm. And so the bridge was kind of falling apart and it was decorated with all this Smoot talk. And at some point,
Smoot-imobilia.
Smoot-imobilia. At some point when I was visiting MIT or Harvard during that visit, I asked somebody what the hell that was. And the Smoot story was explained to me, part of MIT lore. So when the city of Boston rebuilt it, during that period, the engineers that rebuilt the bridge in the employ of the city of Boston, instead of using the standard 6-foot length for sections of the sidewalk, they actually built the bridge with sections of the sidewalk at 5'7" long.
So there's like essentially the sidewalk cracks that will break your mother's back are now a smoot apart?
One smoot apart.
Oh, that's great.
So Boston now has 100% embraced the smoot as a unit of measurement. The bridge is measured in smoots, although the chalk marks continue to not coincide with the sidewalk smoots because it depends on where you start measuring the bridge. And so there are lots of markings of various systems of smoots.
It's a measure of how, you know, MIT-style engineers now have kind of control all of our access to information that you can now turn Google Earth to measure things in smoots as opposed to kilometers or miles.
Google Calculator, Google Earth, and Google Maps all offer you the opportunity to measure things in smoots, or they did until recently. And Google, I guess, decided that they weren't going to be a whimsical company and they were going to eliminate smoots from...
Their search engine will still do it. Like if you just type into the Google search bar, you know, 3 furlongs to centimeters, it will tell you 60,350 centimeters. And if you type in 100 smoots to kilometers, it will say 0.170018 kilometers.
So you could continue to measure things in smoots, even not in Boston, not on a bridge.
If you were so inclined.
Now, hilariously, and once again, we don't know very much about Oliver Reed Smoot. He's a public figure. A thing has been named after him that will exist long after he is gone.
In our era, he's still alive, right?
He's still alive. That's right. And he is cousins with a Nobel laureate.
There's a more famous Smoot, but he doesn't have a unit.
George Smoot is like he won the Nobel Prize in...
Which one?
Physics. He's a physicist.
So the thing that impresses me the most about George Smoot's resume is that he is one of two people ever to win $1 million on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Didn't you appear on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
I did not win the $1 million prize.
But you did appear on the show.
I did. Here's what happens. When the final question comes up, you are effectively betting your whole boodle on the final question sight unseen. So the host, fake redneck Jeff Foxworthy, who is actually like an IBM engineer pretending to be a redneck comedian now.
Sure.
Will tell you, do you want to walk with your $500,000 or do you want to see the final question? So you're betting $500,000 on a random trivia question that's going to appear.
That a fifth grader might know, though.
Sure, but it's all stuff from a fifth grade textbook. Like I had looked at all the $1 million questions and some of them were very hard.
Oh.
What's the maximum number of years you could serve as U.S. president?
Oh, there is no maximum.
There is a maximum.
There's, eight. No, wait. Because you could, let's see, 8, 9, 10, 11.
You can serve up until, if it's more than half a term, you're ineligible to run the second time.
What, really?
Yes. Yeah, so you can actually inherit the Oval Office without being elected, serve a full 2 years. That's how the 20.
So 10.
Yes.
Is the answer.
That's how the amendment is written. Yeah, 10.
Oh.
And so, and there are plenty of questions like that.
I would have gotten that right after 3 times.
But there's plenty of like, which constitutional amendment, what's the name of the first U.S. space probe, blah, 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 or which constitutional amendment? A lot of this stuff is legitimately hard.
And so you step back.
I step back and took my $500,000 and went home, but they show you the question.
Oh, what was it?
What political party did John Adams belong to?
The Whigs.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You have just lost $500,000,
John Roderick. What was it?
Or sorry,
the Know Nothing Party.
I have to say it in Jeff Foxworthy voice. You just lost $500,000.
What was the answer?
He's a Federalist.
Oh, of course.
Jefferson was a Democrat Republican and he faced off against it. And I knew it. And so you can see my face kind of fall. Yeah. But George Smoot is more of a man than me, apparently.
He went all the way to $1 million.
He decided he would risk it all in the $1 million question, which was, in what state would you find Acadia National Park?
Maine.
That is correct. You just won $1 million back.
Hooray.
So maybe the smoot should be a measure of game show testosterone.
I knew the Federalist one too. I got excited.
I'm only like 0.5 smoots when it comes to game show balls.
See, this is the problem. You're good at these things. I would never have even made the buzzer. I would have been all confused. I would have been tying my shoes.
You'd be flustered.
What's interesting about Oliver Smoot, and this gives a sense, although he has his Juris Doctor, This gives a sense of either the sense of humor of international governing bodies that we do not think of as having any sense of humor whatsoever.
That famous UNICEF sense of humor.
Or whether Oliver Smoot became the Smoot because he was a member of an academic culture that was already concerned with systems of measurement, which seems also likely. But in 2001, he was elected the president of the American National Standards Institute, which is a voluntary, nonprofit organization devoted to getting all of the different systems of measurement standardized in American science industry and so forth.
He took over American Weights and Measures.
And then in 2003 was elected president of the International Organization for Standardization, which is the global body concerned with standardizing measurement.
There's probably something in their bylaws whereby it's like, here's how a chairman is elected, but if a man can appear, you know, like whoso can, right, it's like the Sword in the Stone, whoso can appear who is already a unit of membership, he may take his rightful place at the head of the table.
That's what we can, I guess, cannot know until we actually talk to Oliver Smoot, which came first, the chicken or the smoot.
And that concludes the Smoot, entry 1178.1K0626, certificate number 50326, in the omnibus. Listeners, we come from a dystopian time of social media. What unit would you use for social media? What's a...
1 beard second of attention.
Beard second?
Yeah,
like a mansplaining unit?
Exactly. Actually, a beard second is a measurement.
What's a beard second?
A beard second is how long it takes, or how long a beard will grow in a second.
Oh, it's a unit of length.
Yeah, which is effectively...
It must be length. That must be less than the width of an atom, isn't it?
It's effectively 100 angstroms. But the beard second then kind of like reverse engineered the beard inch, which is how long it takes for a beard to grow an inch, how much time it takes for a beard to grow an inch. So a beard second is a measurement of length, and a beard inch is a measurement of time, and it takes 29.4 days for a beard to grow an inch, and Google calculator will
turn
also measure.
If you want to know how many beard inches or how many beard seconds it is to grandma's house,
yeah, or beard inches, how long does it take?
Speaking of measurement uncertainty, that implies that all beards grow at the same length. Is that in fact true?
Well, and I think that the International Organization for Standardization has a different amount of time for a beard inch than Google calculator.
Because it's all these hairless Scandinavian
that's
men.
That's right. They're like, that's not how long it takes to grow a beard inch. Whereas, you know, like all the incels there at Google are like, oh, I grow a beard.
Yeah, the social media unit is probably like the fedora or something.
Right, derp.
It's how fast it takes you to swipe away from someone on a dating app.
How many fedoras does it take for a woman to quit being on Twitter for 2 months?
It's probably a fractional fedora. It's probably like it only takes a few cent a fedora to chase a normal person off of Twitter. If social media still exists for you, we weep for you, we feel bad for you, but yes, we are also hopefully still there for you. At least from our lifetime, our tweets are archived at Omnibus Project, as well as at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick, where you can also find photos of John, speaking of fedoras, in a variety of hats.
Derp.
We also had a Facebook page. We say had, but we didn't start it up.
No, it's a fan-based community that we have almost no authority within.
We have some authority. We can, if somebody complains about a post, we can delete it. But generally, when I see complaints about a post, they seem fine to me, and I can't tell why people are complaining.
When people say, actually, and then offer like a correction, you usually say something to the effect of, listening to our podcast is voluntary. Why don't you go find a hobby? And when somebody...
I don't think I say that. I object to that characterization.
When someone corrects me, I give like a really huffy... a paragraph long explanation why.
Oh, I thought you were going to be all gracious. No, I thought you were going to be the gracious one who said, thank you, you're right. I looked it up and sir, You are correct, and this has changed my life.
No, I'm even grouchier, and I do. I like steam post, and then I stay away for 2 weeks.
I feel like I have a bright line where if somebody makes a correction and it's absolutely, they're absolutely right, I will be like, good catch.
Right. Well, I do that too if they're absolutely right.
But if it's somebody just taking it like an uncharitable view of something we said, or right, like, you know, the typical online fault-finding mechanism.
Right.
Then I will be like, please, I don't see why we have to do this. So why does this interaction exist?
Yeah, that's right.
So check out the Futurelings on Facebook.
Which, it's a wonderful place. None of this ever happens. Yeah,
we don't actually like complain about
them. In the space of a year, I've only left 2 Huffy posts.
Is that like HuffPost?
Well, it's a measurement of how fun a Facebook group is. It's
a per annum.
It's like 2 Huffy posts. Great. And that means I've only left 2 Huffy posts. There are like, if I go on Reddit, I leave 2 Huffy posts an hour.
If you really want to send us corrections, you want to do that face to face. You don't need to humiliate us in front of a crowd. Please send that via individual correspondence to theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Or if it comes with some kind of physical artifact that proves your correctness, if you need to show us Exhibit A.
Right. Or send me a calligraphied letter explaining how I'm wrong, which someone did.
Did that make the medicine go down easier?
Yeah, it did. It was very nice.
Then you can send those via postal mail to The Omnibus Project, P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We have no idea how many beard centimeters
are left here.
Are left.
We need an episode. We need a unit of measurement for the omnibus.
Oh, right.
It's
how many millennia the omnibus has survived? How many millennia away the futurelings are?
I was thinking maybe it's like a 1 hour and 12 minute increment that has about 26 minutes of content. How many omnibi will be left till the end of the world?
We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.